Well, welcome along to Church Online again. My name's Brendan McLaughlin. I'm one of the ministers here at Erwood Anglican. And I thought I'd start with some motivational slogans that will hopefully be of help to us in this current crisis. Here are some of my favourite motivational slogans. The first one goes like this. Rome did not create a great empire by having meetings. They did it by killing all those who opposed them. Or secondly, teamwork means never having to take all the blame yourself. Wise words there. The third one, if you can remain calm while all around you is in chaos, then you probably haven't understood the seriousness of the situation. And fourthly, never underestimate the power of stupid people in large groups. Well, look, it's these last two that are relevant for our topic today. We did have a different sermon planned originally for today, but we decided the COVID-19 crisis was important enough for us to change our regular programming and look at how to navigate that crisis, which sadly not everyone agrees is a crisis, do they? You see, those people who have been calmly hanging out at crowded beaches or going to parties, they haven't understood the seriousness of the situation. Never underestimate the power of stupid people in large groups. A global pandemic is a crisis. And what we want to do across the next few weeks, with the exception of Easter, of course, is to look at how we can best navigate this crisis in a way that pleases God. And we're looking at three things. So this week, we're looking at dealing with fear in a crisis. Then in 2 weeks' time, all right, after Easter, we're going to be looking at sustaining community in a crisis. And thirdly, loving thy neighbour in a crisis. But you see, the thing is, our ability to love our neighbour or even to do community will be hamstrung if we find ourselves debilitated by fear and anxiety. And these are real fears we're dealing with. Right? People are losing their jobs or closing their businesses. Financial anxiety is on the rise. People are panic buying because we've never been through a lockdown before, and it's natural for humans to fear the unknown. And of course, people are dying, in particular the elderly. And so today, what we're looking at is what has helped Christians deal with fear during a crisis down through the ages. So for example, during the bubonic plague, that killed about 200 million, people would kick the family members out onto the street over fear of contracting the virus themselves. Christians would then take those people in and care for them, sometimes at the cost of their own lives. Now, what is it that could possibly motivate someone to put their fears aside and care for a stranger like that? And how do we get that kind of fearlessness ourselves? Well, that's what we're looking at today. And I've got 3 points to show us how to be fearless in the face of the COVID-19 crisis. We're going to begin by seeing how the Bible's advice in dealing with fear is actually the exact opposite to modern psychology. And so I've titled our first point, Not What You Think. We're then going to see that the reason the Bible's advice is the opposite is not because modern psychology is wrong, it's because it doesn't go deep enough. And so I've titled it our second point, Deeper Than You Think. We'll then conclude with our application, which is not a quick fix. Okay, and so I've titled it our third point, Harder Than You Think. If you were hoping to find a quick fix for anxiety and fear, then let me tell you, there are plenty of self-help or pop psychology books out there. But if you're interested in getting to the very heart of our fears and anxieties, then Psalm 27 is the key. So let's jump in and see how dealing with fear is not what you think, deeper than you think, and harder than you think. And I want to begin by looking at what modern psychology has to say on this subject. See, if you were to pick up a book on psychology today, the general consensus on how to overcome anxiety is to remember that most of the things that worry us in life are probably not going to happen. And so worrying about them is not only a waste of time, it actually can stop us from enjoying life. The Bible agrees with this. So this is Proverbs 26:13. Proverbs 26:13 tells us, quote, "The sluggard says there's a lion in the road." Right? I'm not going to work today because what if there's a lion out there and he mauls me? I listened to a Christian psychologist on YouTube this week who said the same thing. He said, during the COVID-19 crisis, beware of living up in your head. Now, what does he mean? He means all those what-if scenarios are probably not going to happen. Instead, he says, focus on the positives, like our abundant health and nutrition resources in this country, and schedule in fun things to do. Just get on with enjoying life. And that is really good advice. But in Psalm 27, David does the exact opposite of this. So have a read with me. Verse 3. He says, though an army besiege me. And then down in verse 10, though my father and mother forsake me. Now, we have no indication in the Bible that David's mother or father ever forsook him. So why is David contemplating such a horrible situation? You see, being abandoned by your parents is about as bad as it gets. I was watching Dancing with the Stars last week, and Ed Cavalier was lamenting about how his father left him and his mother when he was young. You don't get over something like that quickly. So why is David purposely homing in on a really bad thing that might never actually happen? I mean, it's the same with the army. Now, David is one of the few people in life that can literally say, I eat breakfast 300 yards from 4,000 soldiers trained to kill me. Right? He had literal armies out to get him. But again, why focus on the worst case scenario that may never have happened again to David? Right? Why is David doing the exact opposite to what modern psychology tells us? Well, like I said, it's not that modern psychology is wrong. It's that it doesn't go deep enough. You see, David is not interested in behavioral modifications to control our thoughts. Now, these techniques have their place. Don't hear me wrong. But what David is interested here is getting to the very heart of the problem. Why? Because he wants to give us a strategy to help us deal with anything that life might throw at us. And as the coronavirus pandemic has shown us, life can be difficult, right? People are locked up in their house. People are losing their jobs. And people are dying. 55,000 and counting at the time of writing this. So what David gives us here is a way to deal with life's harsh realities. And we would do well to look at this strategy, would we not? And the strategy is found in verse 4. Have a read. One thing I ask from the Lord, this only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. Now remember, this psalm is about dealing with fear. Remember verse 1, the Lord is my light and my salvation, whom shall I fear? And the way David deals with his fear is, one thing I ask from the Lord, this only I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. Now, what does David mean by this? Does he mean to pitch his tent in the temple and just live there every day? Well, no, he doesn't mean that, because no one was allowed to live in the temple other than the priests. What he means is to have an intimate relationship with God. You see, the temple was where God met with his people in Old Testament times. And so what David says is, the way to deal with life's worst fears is to seek and desire an intimate relationship with the Lord. But how does this help, I hear you ask? Well, it helps because our fears are directly proportional to the vulnerability of our ultimate treasure. Now, I'll say that again because this is the pivot on which David's whole thesis hangs. Our fears are directly proportional to the vulnerability of our ultimate treasure. You see, one of our church fathers, St. Augustine, said, anxiety is always a sign of the collapse of a false god. All right, now a false god or an idol is a good thing that we turn into an ultimate thing. Let me explain. The movie The Adjustment Bureau is about a young and upcoming US congressman, Matt Damon, who has a chance meeting with a talented young dancer, Emily Blunt. Now, that meeting was actually orchestrated by a group of guardian angels called the Adjustment Bureau. And their job is to ensure that people's lives proceed following the plan. And the Adjustment Bureau want Matt and Emily to never meet again, which they proceed to orchestrate. But both Matt and Emily's characters have trouble with this. Matt finally asks his guardian angel, Henry, why is it that we are not allowed to be together? To which Henry replies, it's because she is enough for you, and vice versa. Harry says, if you get together with her, you won't feel the need to chase the votes or chase the accolades anymore. And so you won't go on to be president. Likewise, Emily's character won't go on to become an accomplished dancer. So friends, let me ask you, what is it that is enough for you? What is that one thing that if you had it, you would be happy, content? Right? What is that one thing that would mean you no longer needed to chase those likes on social media? You no longer needed to get that job or promotion? You no longer needed more money or more gadgets? You no longer needed to find love or live vicariously through the lives of your children? Right? What is your one thing that would make your life complete? That would be enough for you? Now, if that one thing is not God, then it can be taken from you, can't it? See, what lies at the heart of our fears is the threat of losing our one thing. Our fears are directly proportional to the vulnerability of our ultimate treasure. And friends, this is why Western society is falling apart under COVID-19. Dating apps are going crazy because people are terrified of being lonely. Supermarkets are going crazy because people are terrified they might run out of the essentials like toilet paper. Our liquor stores have gone crazy because people are terrified of trying to navigate a lockdown without alcohol. The stock market has gone crazy because people are terrified their money might get taken away. And our public health orders have had to go crazy, right? We're cordoning off beaches because people are terrified of losing their autonomy, losing the right to do what I want when I want. See, if the COVID-19 crisis has shown us nothing else, it is that Western society is frighteningly fragile. We have built our house upon the sand. Anxiety is always a sign of the collapse of a false god. But David says, there is one thing we can build our house upon that cannot collapse, that cannot be threatened, that cannot be taken away. One thing I ask of the Lord, this only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. Friends, the reason Christians are able to deal so well with fear in a crisis is because not even a pandemic can take away our ultimate treasure. Right? Losing our freedom, our autonomy is tough, but it doesn't crush us. Losing our job is tough, but it's not the end of our world. Losing our money is tough, but God is in control. Losing our health is tough, but that's not our ultimate treasure. And even if we lose our life, for the Christian, that only makes us better. The reason Christians can deal with their fear so well in a crisis is because we have built our house upon the rock, the Lord God. So, this leaves one all-important question. How do we make the Lord our ultimate treasure? Well, the second half of verse 4 holds the key. That I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple. All right, two things, to seek and to gaze. And this is harder than it sounds, okay? So to seek the Lord means to search the scriptures every day. That's how Christians seek the Lord, through reading God's word. And we gaze upon his beauty by meditating on what we find there until we finally delight in it. But it's no different to what we do with our idols, is it? We think about them over and over. Oh, if only I could get my golf handicap down. If only that guy would notice me. If only I could be making a little more money. And we obsess over these things because we feel that they are what will bring us true delight. To make Jesus our ultimate treasure, look, it doesn't mean simply becoming a Christian. That's step one. But Christians still have idols in their hearts that need to be pulled out and replaced by Jesus. And the way we do that, all right, the way we make God our ultimate treasure is through the hard work of seeking him at the temple every day, all right, reading God's word every day, and gazing upon the beauty we find there, meditating, reflecting, turning over in our minds God's beauty. And we see that beauty most clearly at the cross. Because the cross is where Jesus showed that we are his ultimate treasure. Let me explain. Imagine Jesus a couple of thousand years ago standing in heaven and he's looking down to earth and he sees a guy, let's call him David. It's my default name, David. Whenever I forget someone's name, it's like, David? The reason being, my first office job was in a team of eight people and four of them were Davids. All right, so let's just call this guy David. And Jesus says to the Father, look, Father, I would really like David to be with me in heaven. Can you get him for me, please? And the Father says, oh, that's going to cost you, son. And Jesus says, doesn't matter, I'll pay anything because David is my ultimate treasure. He is the one I must have. And so the Father says, well, in order to get David, you're going to have to leave heaven and go down to earth to get him. And Jesus goes, wait, what? Leave the comfort and security of heaven along with my 10,000 angelic hosts who worship me every day? And the Father says, yes, son. And Jesus said, nope, I'm in, because David is my ultimate treasure. Then the Father says, well, you're also going to have to take on humanity. You see, if you want to purchase a human, you have to become a human. And Jesus goes, wait, do you mean be born as a human baby and have my nappy changed and go through puberty? And the Father says, yes, son. And Jesus goes, nope, I'm in. I must have David with me. And then the Father said, but son, people are not going to like you. You see, as God, the things you are going to teach are not going to sit well with rebellious humans. And Jesus says, wait, are you telling me that my people, the creatures I created, are going to reject me? And the Father says, not just reject you, but arrest you, beat you, mock you, spit upon you, and flog you. And Jesus said, I'm in. David is my one thing. And the Father said, well, look, son, the reason you have to take on humanity is because I need to make you vulnerable. I need to make you killable. You see, to purchase David, you have to take the punishment for his sin, which is death. And Jesus goes, wait, are you telling me that as an immortal being, I have to experience death? And the Father says, yes, son. And Jesus says, nope, I'm in, whatever the cost. And then the Father says, but your human death on the cross is only the surface of it. You see, rebellion against your Creator requires punishment from your Creator. And so on the cross, I have to pour out the full wrath upon you. And Jesus said, what? I need to suffer your displeasure as you pour out the full power of your infinite wrath upon me. And the Father says, yes, Son. And Jesus said, nope, I'm still in. David is my ultimate treasure. And then the Father says, one more thing, Son. When you're being nailed to that cross, David is going to be one of the people doing it. And Jesus said, wait, are you telling me that David is my enemy? And the Father said, yes, Son. And you're going to have to let him hold and nail you down so that you can save him. And Jesus said, I'm in. Friends, even if you don't believe in a God like that, don't you secretly wish he were true? For those of us who do, that's how we make Jesus our ultimate treasure. We seek him in his temple every day, and we meditate upon the beauty we find by realizing that we are his ultimate treasure. And friends, as that sinks deeper and deeper into our hearts, those other things, those things that can be threatened, that can be taken away, they start to fade, as do our fears. So, turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in his wonderful face. And the things of this earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace.